Hey, we're delighted to have in the studio tonight again Betsy Bowen. Betsy has got Betsy Bowen Studio here in Grand Marais. I'm sure everybody out there is well aware of that. She's authored many beautiful and popular children's books, along with other books that we're going to discuss tonight. Of course, her woodcuts in the books are so distinctive, and also has the What's Upstairs above the studio for local artists to entertain us. Betsy, welcome back to the Roadhouse.
Well, thank you. My pleasure.
Good. Yeah. We were talking a little off air before we hopped aboard here, and you've had a good day up at your studio. And
yes, good day. It's nice to have visitors stop in. That's terrific, and it's a nice place to be.
It is a nice cozy spot. And for those of you who don't know where Betsy's studio is, it's at, just ask anybody in town where the old Lutheran church is with the distinctive steeple. And we're so happy you saved that building, Betsy.
Oh, well, thanks. You know, it may be the tallest spot in town.
It could
actually
be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a significant building since 1903,
mm-hmm.
as I understand. It's always been a public building where people can come. You know, it's never been a private residence or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's always been a gathering place.
You see a lot of old photos, you know, in a lot of wooded parts of Grand Marais, but the church was there, you know, and you see those old photos.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
that
it's
particular
prominent
church. So, yeah.
Yep.
So anyway, it would have gone away had you not rescued it, and we're very happy about that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, I was mentioning, you know, some of your very popular children's books, and before we get to the new books that you've got out here, I just want to talk a little bit about the children's books and kind of how you get into the mindset to make those work in the eye of the children.
I think I am one.
Okay.
That helps, doesn't it, Betsy? It does help.
It doesn't feel like a change, actually.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful to hear that it does work for kids.
Mm-hmm. Because it's a certain flow that works for a child.
I think it's probably kind of a more elemental way of putting things than we often do as adults. You know, we kind of dance around things, or, you know, say something kind of indirectly as though someone will get it. But I think it's more, kids are so direct. You know, they're so perceptive and just say it right out there. And I think that's a good approach for something that's for kids.
Mm-hmm. And I think the art for kids does much better even than photographs. I think that it allows their imaginations to work better. Am I somewhere there?
Well, I like that, the idea of that. I feel like that myself a bit. Like movies with special effects and everything's there aren't as interesting to me as an animation. Quite often, where it's mm-hmm. where it's simple, or as reading text, where I get to imagine everything in my mind. I like that mm-hmm. particularly well, and I think maybe that connects to I don't know. Kids are just so smart. They'll
trip you up if they can, because they have great memories. You know,
yeah,
once
yeah.
you say something, that's it. It's stuck in there. You know, it just floats away for me now. You know, one ear and out the other, or whatever it's called. But yeah, they once you've said something, they'll let you know later. But in the books, and you know, we're very lucky to have a number of really good children's books authors and illustrators in this area, and it really makes that come out when you see the variety that we have here. Your books and Kelly Dupree's,
yes.
and others,
yep.
that are out there. And the woodblock, you know, that's kind of what I was alluding to a little bit. It has that clean, simple look that I think is attractive in a children's book when you do your illustrations.
Well, thanks. I think it does work well. And kids look for details. And there's something about the woodblock medium that lends itself to becoming a really straightforward image. Mm-hmm. It's pretty hard to be subtle because you have to cut somewhere. You have to decide, like, all right, I'm going to cut right there. You can't kind of mush it around like you can do with them.
Yeah. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
Once you take that away,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it isn't like you can get the eraser out or, you know, cover up with more paint, you know?
Yeah, yeah, you commit.
You're committed.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And you've kind of taken what I would call, in my mind, we're going to talk about two of the newer books that you have out, a major leap in this new book of illustrated poet, actually a narrative poem about Burr and Alexander, which I read. I came to your studio and got it and mm-hmm. read it yesterday. Did Jeff, the author, approach you about this? How did you get together? That was Jeff Humphreys.
Yes, Jeff Humphreys is a professor of French studies at Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge, and he lives in New Orleans. And I first met him at the Ely Art Fair 10 years ago, maybe. And he just came by and said, I write poems. I think your work would be a great match for illustrations. Would you be interested in looking at them? And he said it all about twice as fast as that.
Oh, yeah.
he's just a fast-moving, kind of, you know, tightly wound guy, as I uh-huh. have the bit that I know him. And I said, well, sure, you know, because sometimes that works out, and you never know until you take a look. So the next day, he buzzed by, flung an envelope of poems on my table, and then late, you know, the next week or something, I had a chance to read them, and I loved the poems. He was writing, he worked in a completely different take on the North Woods. You know, I'd been here for decades already by then, and it made me see where I live a different way, and I thought, whoa, great. And I'm still mystified why he looked at Antler Bear Canoe and thought that somehow that would match his poems. I have no idea what, you know, how he was seeing that or sort of trusted that that could work. So it was a tickle for me. I loved working with the poetry because it was more, maybe more abstract a bit. I mean, the pictures show are like, okay, that's a tree and a fish, but they're more elemental in that poetry book.
Mm-hmm. And the Burr and Hamilton book, now it's the 200th anniversary of that famous duel.
Yes, that was 1804 on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of surprised that this must have been an event in history that really captured his imagination.
You know, it's a good question. I don't know exactly why he focused on that particular time period in U.S. history. I guess I don't really know that. But the form of the book is also poetry, I mean, also as well as that first book we did together. And he, I know from reading some of his academic work that he has a deep study in Japanese poetic forms. And so part of his interest was in pairing up this Japanese form there's a kind of a clean, unfrilly way of writing that I think is what he sees in the Japanese style. And he was interested in, you know, this part of history has been worked and overworked, but he was interested in taking it to a more artistic form to see whether there were elements of human nature or elements, you know, parallel elements to culture through the ages or whatever, just kind of a thread in an artistic way that might echo by doing it that way.
I think there's something too, and I remember, I think all of us remember from school, the Aaron and Burr duel because it's such a, it captures your imagination that two people can take 10 steps apart, turn around and fire at one another. I mean, as a youngster, it's like, it's so stark, you know, and it grabs you. Perhaps that's part of the feeling that he was trying to get out in this book, is just that elemental presence.
Well, that certainly came across to me. He talks not only about Burr and Hamilton, but also about Thomas Jefferson, because mm-hmm. he sees Thomas Jefferson as a, in a way, in the background of everything that happened, a real orchestrator, a strong and kind of manipulative character in the politics of the time. And so he plays these three characters. And I think stark is the word that kept coming to me too. Like how can, you know, that even happen? And so tracing the, you know, a bit about each one's life and how it might come to that point mm-hmm. in history that's so dramatic.
Yeah, I was really, really caught by that. And it really worked out well that he used symbols for those people, like the moon, the bird, and the cat, for you as an illustrator.
Well, I latched right onto that. The opening scene is a kind of a simply staged performance stage, almost, with masked characters that are speaking in a cryptic way to each other, so that it's hard to figure out who's who and what is it, what are they about. And so I used those opening scene masks as symbols all the way through and kept mm-hmm. the masked characters. I thought it fit with the way I perceived the book anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was pretty remarkable. And I know it's stated right away in the book, it's a drama for voices and like a narrative poem. And I believe that you have also, along with some other members of the community, have attempted that.
Yes, we did a read-through last weekend just as a way to hear the voices out. It was, we took an excerpt from it and had a bit of an audience. And really appreciated just hearing, you know, the character as a real character, speaking the way that the character spoke in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you've kept that. You're going to keep working at that. Is there a future for?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah,
there's certainly. I there could be. Mm-hmm. That's an unexplored future.
Okay.
Let's say.
Well, we're going to look forward to see where that goes. And of course, that book is available at your studio.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Burr and Hamilton, and it's wonderfully done, and it really is a. It's a unique way of looking at history.
Yes, I think that was the idea.
Mm-hmm. You also had recently done the illustrations for another, what I'm sure is turning out to be a very popular book, and collaborating with Laura Erickson, who I think all of our listeners is know so well and have listened to for so long, and it had to be a treat for you.
Well, this was a happier book.
Yeah, this is the 12 Owls. And it's about the owls that can be seen in Minnesota. They don't all reside here, but they it's possible to see them here, along with, of course, the ones that are regularly seen.
Yes. Well, Laura is remarkable. I guess we know that. But, mm-hmm. wow, just working with her on this was just terrific. She's such a wealth of knowledge, and it's just, I don't know, she's got the recall at any given moment. She can say, she can just keep going, talking about any bird, you know, any little, it calls up anecdotes, and it was impressive mm-hmm. working with her.
We had a lot of fun talking to her in the studio about her husband, who you would think must be a birder. And he's not, because he's working with her all the time, taking her here, taking her there, and anyway, it was a lot of fun to talk about that. And of course, she has an owl that lives at her home.
Yes, I've met Archimedes.
Oh, you have?
And also Russ, the husband.
Okay.
And they're both very nice.
Well, that's good. And it's good that they get along, Russ and Archimedes.
Apparently they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, gee, Archimedes is really captivating. Mm-hmm.
What was your approach as far as illustrating the owls and capturing their personalities, different personalities?
Well, we started out with the idea that this was blending art and science. I'm not a scientific illustrator, and she was not out to make a field guide. So we weren't after that kind of approach. So the idea of, you know, there could be more, you know, book of broad interest was fun for me. And I think, you know, that was hopefully making the best use of, you know, both of our abilities. And so Laura wrote these essays, anecdotal essays, very similar to her radio shows, I would say, you know, a mix of factual and interesting things about each owl. So there's one essay about each owl. And then I did a portrait, and these are paintings, so this was a little different for me technique-wise, too. They're kind of woodcutty looking, I think, but they're actually paintings. And so there's one life-size portrait. I was really fascinated by the range of sizes that the owls are, you know, from like 7 inches up to pretty big, like 3 or 4 times that height. So I thought showing the sizes in relationship would be a big point of interest. So it's a life-size portrait of each owl, and then a bunch of ink wash drawings throughout the book of just variations. So it might be a bird in flight, it might be some skeletal part of the bird, it might be an owl pellet, just different things that she talks about in the book. It was fun.
Now, did you save some of this as artwork at your studio?
Yes.
So people can purchase it separately?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yep. So the originals went up for sale. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you have copies there that people can buy?
Prints? No, I don't. Okay. I just have the originals from it. And then this winter we'll make some woodcuts that are inspired by the project.
Yeah. Have you got any stories you can tell us about Laura as you worked with her, or Russ or Archimedes?
Oh, well, let's see, a couple things. The way I was working, I had the text from Laura, and then as I was doing the paintings and drawings, I would snap a little picture and email to her, and then she might write back, so could you send me the link to whatever Google photo you were using for that owl? And then I'd send it, and she'd go, actually, that's not that owl. I got that a couple times.
Okay.
I know that's Archimedes' type of owl, Eastern screech owl, but, you know, his neck doesn't really do that. So maybe, you know, I'd maybe give that another try. She was very polite and very appreciative of the art. And the thing that seemed to bug her the most, though, was the snowy owl portrait painting had yellow eyes, black pupils. Most of the owls have yellow eyes, but a couple of them have brown eyes, dark, or I thought they were brown. Maybe they're just actually dark. But anyway, the snowy owl has those yellow, dramatic-looking eyes with black pupils. So I had done it and sent her the picture of it. And she said, the pupils are too small. It's too small, because any birder would look at that in an instant and say, that was a flash photograph of that bird.
Oh, really?
How about that? Yeah, so I said, no, don't worry, I'll fix it. I can't do it now, but before it goes to press, I'll fix it. Because the art by then was out of my hands, I think.
Yeah.
And she'd gotten the scan.
She picks up on all those details, yeah. And she knows.
Yep, but I so appreciated her, you know, being, 'cause she'd look at things that seem significant, but it's, you know, it's not a field guide drawing of a bird. You know, it's more expressive, or what I thought I was doing was, you know, in a way, more artistic, that isn't the word I want, but more expressive. Mm-hmm. And she could look at it that way. You know, she's so skilled in every factual detail, but it was just certain things that she thought were worth making better.
And for those of you who may, I don't know how many there would be, but for those of you who aren't familiar with Laura Erickson, you can listen to her segment on WTIP weekly here for the birds. And it's been going on as long as I remember on the radio KUMD before we were aboard here. And right. I was surprised when she was here to find out that it's distributed widely across the U.S. Here I thought she was only talking to us all this time. Mm-hmm. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, isn't that sweet? I think she's pretty well known in the bird world.
Yes, she is.
I mean, Cornell University is, as I understand it, a really strong center for ornithological study, and she's a science consultant there. It's a big deal. It's an important role that she has. Yeah.
And of course, that book, 12 Owls, is also at your studio. Can be picked up there, mm-hmm. and it's getting close to Christmas. And as it gets close to Christmas, you know, one thing that I like to talk about when I think about you, Betsy, is kind of what a visionary you've been in this community, starting the co-op. I don't know if people knew that started in your home, but also starting a couple of pageants that have become a big part of Grand Marais, and that's the solstice pageants.
Yes, in fact, and tonight even we'll be working on the winter one. It's a good time. And can I ramble on more?
Let's
about
do
that?
Yeah, we want to hear.
Ramble away,
the
Betsy.
Big, yeah. All right, the big show will be next Wednesday, the 21st, which is, we think, the actual solstice. So 21st of December, 6 o'clock, down at North House. The show is a shadow puppet show primarily, with also some life-size characters. And that happens outdoors. So everyone's welcome. It's good for all ages. Dress warm. And then that's followed by a potluck, which is indoors. And then after that, we will show the video of last summer's solstice, which you alluded to as well. So the summer solstice and winter solstice are the ones that Good Harbor Hill players focus on.
Yeah, I think it was last year, year before, I happened to walk into one of the rooms at North House, and you know, there was our good friend Barb Levine, surrounded by cutouts. She had cutouts everywhere, trying to organize them. And I don't know if people realize how much effort goes into those affairs.
It's all over so fast, too. It's hard to.
Yeah.
It's like cooking.
What's the theme of the?
The theme in general of the solstice astronomical event is that it's been getting darker,
oh, sure.
darker, colder, and the thrilling thing about the solstice time is it's the very low spot of that darkening, and after that light begins to come back. So the sun coming back is the core idea, and we have so we're making a shadow puppet show about these characters. It's called Krampus. They're kind of monstery kind of guys, furry, monstery, loud characters. And they've stolen the sun this year, as it turns out.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be
fun. It's always fun.
Yep.
Yeah.
Will we be throwing gloomies on the fire?
Gloomies on the fire, yes. Thanks for the reminder. Yes, because that's, I think, one of the keys of getting through the winter is just facing all those things that have piled up until now, and by golly, let's send them up in smoke, you know, and just lighten the load, and then we can go into the new year fresh.
All you Norwegians out there, get rid of it. This is the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, heck of a letting go.
Yeah. No more angst. We don't want any more angst out
there.
It
takes a lot more than a bonfire at North House to get rid of some of the Norwegian. You're talking centuries.
Well, it could be. Betsy, have you got a website that folks can go to look at your studio, some of the things that are in there?
Yes, it's at woodcut.com.
And what's the actual address?
Of the studio is 301 First Avenue West, Grand Marais.
And of course, North House is right down by the harbor.
Yes.
For those of you who would like to go to the solstice this 21st.
Yes.
So that sounds great. Betsy, I want to thank you so much for coming in here and giving us some more of your time. It's always a pleasure. And we hope that you throw any gloomies you may have. I don't know that you ever had any.
I'll throw some of yours if you want.
Oh, that'd be perfect.
You too, Bob. Totally. Send them over.
Thank you.
Yeah, we've been enjoying Betsy Bowen, so thank you very much.
My pleasure.